Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our minds for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast number 191. We're closing on the end of the year, fellas.
Yeah, yes,
just
we are.
A few weeks.
Everybody get their best of list ready?
Yes. As soon as the balloons drop and all that, I will read my best of list.
Okay. We're
going to
do it this week.
Wait, what's this? We're doing best of lists?
No, we're doing best of lists.
I think I'm going to do that like a day before the actual podcast
day
happens.
Before, hour before.
Oh, see, day before, hour before. Randy's like 2 weeks, about 6 weeks ago.
And he's been compiling the whole year.
Yeah, but the whole year.
He has scrolls to look through and in his library of tomes.
I have detailed files. So, yeah.
I have read a bunch of stuff I know that I really liked this year. I think I will be able to put together a pretty fun list.
We all might like the same things, though.
Y'all are not going to be as into Royal City as I am.
It's true.
No one is going to be as into DC as you are.
That's true.
No one will be as into whatever dumb shit Randy likes as he is.
I'm just going to say, who's going to take Black Hammer? Is it you or Randy? You're going to have to fight for it.
I was the one.
You stole it!
It's on tape! Don't erase this, Randy.
Edit.
Viewers, you heard it, unless he's edited and you didn't hear it. And we sound like madmen.
Yes. I'm going to edit this to make you sound like Mad Men.
No,
Like the TV show Mad Men?
Yes, like the TV show like Mad
Randy,
Men.
Randy, I should get it, but you can then gloat throughout the whole thing about how it was really yours.
Your bargain is acceptable.
He's going to write a song.
So, yeah, we are closing in on holidays, so this Saturday we'll be closing early at 7 p.m. instead of our usual 9 p.m. so that Honor can attend our staff Christmas party.
Yep.
And then we will be closed on Monday, December 25th and Monday, January 1st. But we'll be open regular hours on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve because we had closed at 7 on those days anyway because it's Sunday this year.
Yep.
So come in, do your holiday shopping, and we're still planning how to buy stuff.
And just one random thing before we get to other store stuff. Star Wars hits this week.
Yes.
Please do not talk spoilers in the store.
Yes. We'll try to keep this place a Star Wars spoiler-free zone. We're all seeing it on Thursday. We'll try to extend the spoiler blockade for at least another week or two.
Yeah, we don't want to spoil anybody shopping who hasn't gotten a chance to see it. Yeah.
Don't ruin Star Wars at Christmas. What kind of jerk are you?
That's very... Don't do that. That's just
I also want to say to people, to our shoppers, that... it feels like on an almost daily basis there's some cool new game or comic coming in, but especially lots of new games hitting right now.
Yeah.
And we got all those like amazing miniatures last week, which did like crazy gangbusters. Like I came in on Monday, and just over the prior like 4 days, you know, like half of them looked to have been picked up.
Yeah,
and that's like out of many multiples of like 50 different miniatures.
Yep.
Everybody wanted a Mimic and a Beholder. What are you talking about?
But there's also like there's a new Dominion expansion that hit this week. And just new role-playing game stuff. Just all kinds of things hitting constantly.
Yep.
It's very exciting.
It is.
All right.
This Sunday is the Arkham Horror Invocation, where we have four players can play Arkham Horror. There'll be some cool prizes. I think it's a playmat that everybody gets. It's a $5 buy-in, but you get some cool stuff. And I believe we have two people officially signed up. We still have room for two more.
Yep.
We let us know. You can drop us an email. You can give us a call, but...
Fans of the game or anyone who's played it at all, it is well worth the $5 to get in.
Yep. Then we're into January. We have a Rivals Vixalon pre-release coming up and a Potion Explosion game day. But that'll be it for December, so...
They should call it Potion Explosion.
Potion Explosion?
Yeah.
Oh, we also have a Star Realms organized play kit, so we're going to... Yep. Maybe January, February, we're going to set up a Star Realms tournament.
Yay.
The greatest game of all time, people.
Yep. Dave is a fan.
Yeah.
All right. Bunch of news this week, which is mostly a bunch of trailers dropping. I guess this is leading into Last Jedi. Is that why it's like, or it's just there's a lot of movies coming out?
I think just a lot of like big releases getting ready to hit, I guess, in the new year. And...
So we're going to go in random order, just in the order that I put them in this list. So we're going to start with Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
I don't like starting with that.
Tell us why this is not terrible.
Wow.
That's have you stopped beating your wife kind of questioning lower, Randy, there. You should really be doing police interrogations with that.
I think honestly, I have to cop to it a little bit. My obsession with Jurassic Park, because it came out at the perfect age for me.
Yeah.
Right. And I saw it at the perfect time.
Yeah, as we've noted, it is to the more youthful generation what a Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars or something like that might have been to ours.
Right.
And I like Jurassic World. I know a lot of people hated it.
I didn't hate it.
I thought it was a very entertaining film. None of these are going to be like the greatest movie of all time,
but this one is going to have Jeff Goldblum in it.
Yeah, and he reprises his role as Ian Malcolm.
I hear it's a more cameo-ish than I had.
I think it's less than people were expecting.
Yeah, well, it looks like he's making. I mean, Ian Malcolm is the last guy who would go back to an island full of dinosaurs. So I think he's like presenting it at the
Sam Neill's character probably.
He was in the second one, right?
Who? With his Malcolm?
Yeah,
he was in the second one.
Yeah. And
he went to Isla Nublar or Nubar?
Yeah, or is that the first one?
I don't know.
You could buy that, but incidentally, you could contrive a reason for anybody to get back to anything.
Sure, it'd be tough.
but the premise isn't bad. The notion of sort of a volcano on the island is going to destroy them. So they're like, well, we got to go rescue the dinosaurs.
Yeah,
right. We got to it's like they got to move these rare and endangered animals to a safe place. Is this separate from the? I'm guessing that's the name of a dinosaur.
It's his Velociraptor.
Or is it Cookie Monster?
It's his trained Velociraptor.
It's the only of the one the one that survived.
So, as a quick question, when who, John Hammond is that the guy who created it all?
Yep. Sir Richard Attenborough.
He spared no expense.
Yep,
spared no expense.
Is it still taking place on the original island or the side island? Because I have this feeling he would not have chosen an island with an active volcano.
No, this is a different island. Jurassic World is a completely different island.
It's a new place.
Okay. Now, before they staked out their theme park, did they check and see if a volcano was on the island?
You know what? Where were you when they were making the island, Dave? I mean,
and Dave, global warming, I'm sure it affected something.
Nobody likes a Monday morning quarterback, Dave.
They're like, it could blow up in 5 years, but it could blow up in 500 years. Yeah. It's a chance we'll take.
Yeah, they were like, this island is cheap. It's a perfect setting. Yes, there's a dormant volcano, but I'm sure everything will be fine. And if you don't believe people would do that, I give you as Exhibit A all of 2017.
Yeah, there is some validity to that. And also, I will buy into it also on the basis of it's cool to have dinosaurs running around from an exploding volcano.
Nothing is ridiculous anymore. That is the one upside to 2017. Nothing you do in any movie is ever going to be like, oh, come on, that wouldn't happen. You cannot say that anymore.
Right.
And I feel like
I used to think watching the prequels, mind you, that I'm like, oh my gosh, every time Palpatine goes up in front of the Senate floor and he's like gives this almost cacklingly evil speech as he's like, thank you for investing me with the wartime powers. Yep. And I'm like, that's so ridiculous. Oh my god, is it not ridiculous?
Nope. 2017, man. Anything can
2017,
happen.
2017, Palpatine stood up and accepted the presidency.
All the screenwriters should be very happy for what 2017 gave them.
They can get away with anything.
They can hand wave anything.
Now, if we could get a Deus Ex Machina save at some point, that would be great.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Nick, what were you going
to
say?
I was going to say, this is a teaser, so I think there's going to be more to the story other than just a volcano. We still have story threads that need to be resolved from the last one.
Like what?
They're B.D. Wong, working with the military.
Okay.
So, the same character from the original.
Rival teams might be trying to get the dinosaurs off the island.
I just want to see weaponized dinosaurs used as soldiers. Which is, again, crazy.
I suspect you're right that we'll have some overlapping motivations going on
here.
And
I liked Chris Pratt and, why am I blanking on Ron Howard's
Bryce
daughter?
Dallas Howard.
I really enjoyed her, and I'm glad that she's coming back for the sequel.
You know, there is a certain, he's supposed to be Han Solo cocky and Guardians of the Galaxy.
I mean, he plays Chris
Pratt. And kind of in everything.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is... He has a certain smugness in this trailer that made me kind of want to throttle him. I was like, I kind of see why the girlfriend broke up with him.
Yeah.
I was like,
and I don't feel like
he's
gonna be a great at stable relationship.
I feel like if you're the only guy on the island who knows how to talk to velociraptors, you can be a little smug about that.
What do you call it? Billy the Extreme in Twister could talk to tornadoes and the weather, and he wasn't smug.
He was extreme.
He was mildly smarmy because he was Bill Paxton, and he was by nature.
Okay.
Not as smarmy as Jonas, but...
Right. Far, far from it.
I have to say, discussing the Jurassic World trailer, I did not expect to get from Trump to Billy the Extreme. And yet we did.
You know what? They were all parts of the 90s as well.
It's true.
It's 2017.
And I'm still mourning Paxton.
Well, yeah.
All right. Jessica Jones got a season 2 trailer.
Okay, I didn't see this, but I also have not seen Jessica Jones.
It made good use of, was it Joan Jett's song?
Yes.
And, what song?
It
may have been Barracuda.
That's
actually.
Heart.
But it was.
Oh, or is that Heart?
Right. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, it was a good song.
Jesus Christ.
And it looks like season two is going to be about how Jessica Jones got her powers.
Yes, that's going to be the bigger story.
No Luke Cage, but they are going to do Patsy Walker.
You mean like flashbacks?
I think that's going to be the story of her looking at how she got her powers.
Oh, okay.
Because I was wondering, you know, what do you do with No Purple Man? What's the story? And it seems like the central spine of the story is going to be her how she got her powers.
I actually, I kind of wish it sort of functioned like the comics where every arc in there was a mystery she was investigating, but it was all based heavily in the notion of the Marvel shared universe superhero world where there were, like, superheroes and villains and mutants were a thing. And
yeah,
like,
Netflix doesn't do that.
Yeah, and also, they just don't have that level of a shared world
yet. Also, Alias was really about how damaged Jessica Jones was, and I think they picked that up and ran with it.
So yeah, that was definitely the
it definitely looks like they're going to be doing a little bit more investigative stuff. They showed her on missions and things like that. So
yeah. I've soured on the Netflix stuff for the most part, but Jessica Jones is my favorite of them, and I'm looking forward to seeing season two.
I only kind of peek in on them, but what I watched of it was actually very well done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And since I've been hearing enough good buzz on the Punisher, I'm gonna give that one a try and then work backwards.
And I'm sure we'll see
vaulting over Iron Fist.
And we'll see Purple Man show back up in some fashion.
But he's dead.
Doesn't stop a person who's lamenting or basically, you know, repentant for killing him.
I guess
he'll show back up as an apparition or a flashback or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's too good of a character to completely get rid of.
I'm not so sure about that. I think they may have be done with him. They also would have to re-bring in David Tennant. So
what's he doing right now? He's not doing anything.
I don't know.
He's probably Shakespeare somewhere.
Yeah, probably in Shakespeare.
Just because he's British doesn't mean he's doing Shakespeare.
But I guarantee you, he is.
Yeah, you Google right
every
now.
Every British actor, when they're not in a movie, is in some production.
Dave, he could be standing right behind you. I don't know.
Doing Shakespeare.
Right. He'd be doing Shakespeare in the park in our store.
Battle Angel Alita got a trailer.
Oh yeah.
I don't know this manga.
I don't
anime.
Know the story at all, and I know there's some love for it. James Cameron's producing. Robert Rodriguez is directing.
That's crazy, by the way.
I don't know. It looked okay.
Yeah, that's what I felt. I've actually already, when you brought that up, I was like, oh yeah, I watched that trailer like 2 days ago, and I don't even remember what happened in it. I do remember, yes, it looks weird that she has the kind of CG big
eyes. Eyes are weird.
Which looks like all those Snapchat filters where they give people anime eyes.
Yeah.
Which also weirded me out, by the way.
Yeah. But everyone else in this does not have anime eyes. So
right.
I think it's meant for like, the aberration.
Is she a robot?
Yes.
She could be a robot or a cyborg or something.
Yes.
Okay. Is she a battle angel?
She is a battle angel.
Yeah.
Her name is
Alita.
Her name is Alita.
All right. I know some stuff.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, none of us have read this manga, so I think that, like, any impact this trailer is going to have is completely lost on us.
Right, well, to be fair, like, when I was watching, like, Ghost in the Shell, I have not read that manga, but I've seen bits and pieces, and I was able to recognize, oh, this is, some of these are iconic scenes.
Yeah.
But that movie was boring.
Yep. I have a feeling that their attempts to make a big sci-fi, surrealist, cyberpunk manga or an anime into live-action movies are going to go over about as well as Terry Gilliam projects.
I can't quite call it... I don't know if I'm going to be able to call this one boring because Robert Rodriguez doesn't make, per se, boring movies.
No, sometimes he makes nonsense movies.
Yeah, he makes nonsense movies, but I don't know. When was the last movie that he did? Was it Planet Terror?
No, it had to be something besides Planet Terror, right?
Oh, Machete.
Machete, yeah.
And various, like...
But that was a while back.
The Machete sequels a few years ago. Yeah, he makes bonkers, ridiculous movies, and I've sort of fallen off of Robert Rodriguez.
Now, if you mix bonkers, ridiculous with anime, that could work. So this might...
The trailer wasn't giving off that Rodriguez vibe.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
This movie would be improved 100% with Danny Trejo.
All movies were. All movies.
He'd be like, I'm Battle Angel Alita.
If Danny Trejo was in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, I'd be more interested in
seeing. Oh my god, yeah.
There's a podcast, the Ringer podcast I listen to, that focuses on favorite movies.
Yeah.
And they have a new question. Can this movie be improved with Danny Trejo? I kid
really?
You not.
Because the answer is yes to every movie. Like,
of course, the only thing that was a difference was in Heat. It was already good because Danny Trejo was already in it.
And if you had another Danny Trejo, I think it'd be better.
Right.
And also, like, If you were to add Danny Trejo to, say, Titanic, better movie.
Yeah.
You add Danny Trejo to Star Wars,
Danny Trejo was the captain of the Titanic?
Yes.
But much better.
Danny Trejo in Love Actually. Danny Trejo...
Danny Trejo would have taken out... was his evil bodyguard of... what's his name? Was it David Warner? Was kind of his...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Daily bodyguard. He would have fought Machete in a cool fight, yep, that would have like been a boss fight sort of thing. Danny Trejo would have taken him out, and then he and a bevy of the hottest babes of the Titanic... Yep. Would have escaped.
So you think Danny Trejo should have been Jack?
No, actually, I think Jack goes ahead and gets his story and he drowns. And but the happy ending isn't the melancholy, she kept the jewelry or whatever. It's that Danny Trejo
is on the door.
Escaped with the babes.
Yes, that's the happy ending.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he finances the expedition to look into it. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway, didn't expect it to go there.
Danny Trejo improves everything.
Yes.
Ready Player One, second trailer. How we feeling?
I'm all in.
Better trailer.
Yeah.
Better music mix. Yeah. Honestly, if you drop in, Jump? I think from Van Halen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was at least one other notable
one. It's very 80s.
It is.
Interestingly, they sounded slightly reorchestrated, which I thought was kind of interesting, but in kind of a cool, futuristic-y way.
It is nothing but nostalgia.
Remind me, who read the books?
We all did, I think.
I did not read it.
Oh, I thought you did.
Okay,
no.
So Nick read the book.
So, yeah.
There was stuff in there where it was recognizably...
Oh, books. Yeah.
But also they added some, like, Tracer from Overwatch is in there.
Yeah, Tracer from Overwatch is in there.
They added some new...
The Battletoads are in there.
Oh, my God. It makes sense that they would be adding some stuff because I know that they had to lose some stuff, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just couldn't get the rights to every single
property. One of the biggest ones in there is not going to be in there. The Japanese... why am I blinking on the... Not Sentai. The one that Matt Frank was talking about.
Is it like Ultraman or something?
It may have been Ultraman.
But they've got Gundams.
Right, but Ultraman was, I think, a really big portion towards the end.
Is the notion that I know that the idea is that this, the virtual world or whatever, was that this guy has like this secret thing to find in it or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's like a treasure hunt.
It's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Is the crazy 80s stuff because that was his era?
Yes.
Okay, I was like, why would everybody in this future be interested in the 80s?
Because everyone, he was nostalgic for it, and that sort of retro nostalgia for it.
Got it, okay.
And...
It's still, I can't say that it, like, at this point it's like a movie where I'm like, I am definitely going to see that. I have only sort of mild interest in it, but I did like the trailer here.
Yeah, I think,
you saw a little bit more of the real world in it, too,
Spielberg
right?
is the guy to make this movie.
Very much so.
And I think there's two ways it's going to go. Either it's going to be really fun, sort of 80s nostalgia fest, or it's going to be an utter trash fire. I see no middle ground. I'm guessing.
So you're basically saying exactly like the book.
I'm going to either love it or hate it. Yes, and I think that's exactly.
I think there could be middle ground.
You think it could be just boring?
I think it could be an awkward, stumbling sort of a little bit of a mess, but still had some cool scenes in it and some great little moments.
I have more belief in Spielberg's talent than he's going to make a dumpster fire.
Was BFG really good?
I did actually see that one, but from reviews, I remember it being getting really good reviews.
What else has he made lately?
Bridge of Spies.
He's done some serious movies. Yeah. This is some years ago now, but like Lincoln and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think he's made a couple of bombs, but...
He's generally a pretty... I mean, other than say like AI, which was him taking over from
Kubrick,
which is a bad idea. But in general, Spielberg always...
He has maintained his craft.
Like, I don't love Munich, but Munich's a solid film.
Yeah. Right?
You're not like, this was made by somebody who forgot how to make movies.
Right. I've never had that reaction to Spielberg stuff.
And I have a feeling this could be a lot of fun for him to make,
you know,
because he's got
like,
that.
I do wonder how it's going to do. It has like, that book was already kind of a, divisive and both beloved and be-hated among geek fandom.
Yeah.
But they need a mega audience for this, which is, I'm sure it's budget thing.
If they play up all the properties that they're including, which the trailer definitely does to an extent, I mean, you have Iron Giant, Back to the Future,
King Kong,
Akira, Overwatch, A-Team.
Is Dig Dug in it?
I think it might be.
Somewhere. I would be shocked.
I need it to be.
I mean, if the Battletoads are in it, anything is possible.
By the way, there's like 90s stuff getting in there.
Street Fighter's in there because Chun-Li was in there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of just takes everything to the nth degree. And I think people will respond to that because everyone has a fondness for something that's going to be in there.
It's true. Probably
especially
so.
Iron Giant, which apparently is getting a really big part.
Huh.
So this might be the sequel to Iron Giant. The stealth sequel to Iron Giant that we'll ever get. which more people need to go see that or see that movie. Pick up the Blu-ray. Get it for Christmas.
Everybody's seen Giant.
I have friends who have not.
Yeah, those are not your friends.
I don't think it reached the mass market that Disney wanted.
Oh, it definitely was kind of a flop.
No, it was a flop. But the thing is, like, everybody I know has since seen it.
Right, but I think
in your circle, yes. But I think outside of your circle,
Well, that doesn't matter.
What else we got, Randy?
All right. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse trailer. Yay. This was badass.
Yep. This was a, it was like 2 minutes, but it was like almost entirely like sort of mood and style of Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Well, this is
their method of sort of visualizing the movement and the look of the city and its kind of the deep neon lights. It looked like, I mean, in some ways like nothing I'd seen before as far as action goes.
If anything, I mean, the closest I came was rumoring some of Big Hero 6.
Yeah,
but the animation is fantastic. The use of hip hop music is fantastic.
And this is Lord Miller. Lord Miller.
And it's not till Christmas next year, which is cruel.
Poor Lord Miller.
Lego. Movie.
Okay. So they've established their bona fides.
Yes, very much so.
And they will probably be able to, one would think, handle both action and humor pretty adroitly.
Well, and this is sort of surprising, and I know it's kind of hit people a little weirdly that they're going to include more of Spider-Verse in this.
Yeah, but
right. One of the handful of lines is him talking to Peter Parker.
How many of us are there? Yeah.
He's like, so there's how many?
Yeah.
Which I know is... I like the Spider-Verse, so I'm kind of curious.
Are people worried it'll take away from Miles?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
And
it's interesting because, of course, the Parker fans were initially like, Miles takes away from Peter, and that is kind of interesting. But,
well, I love Miles. He's a great character.
Well, one of the things I've noticed, this is just a sort of casual observation at the store, is a number of kids in the last few months who they're interested in Spider-Man on the shared universe level.
Yeah.
That is their entry point, which I think it hits that sweet spot for kids where, you kind of get to pick your own favorite from a wide variety, a little bit of the Pokemon catch-em-all.
Didn't they do like a video game that was a Spider-Verse game?
Yep, they've done apps games and stuff like that had it. So, yeah, like, kids know about Spider-Man 2099, or some of them do, and they know about Miles, and they know about Spider-Gwen, or Ghost Spider, as they're calling her now.
We'll get to that.
It's just fascinating to me that that's their entry point. It is going to weird me out as somebody who grew up with, like, Spider-Man was an extremely specific character, weird loner kind of guy, but who was, like, still the icon of the Marvel Universe, but was just one guy. And now people are going to think of him in a very different light, I would imagine, from here on out.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. Spidey was always the guy who wouldn't join the Avengers, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then... now he's the guy who is like he's an Avenger, both in the movie and in the comics. Yep.
Although the movie did sort of get a fair amount of the tone right. You know, they changed that, but had him like hero worshipping Stark and kind of really trying very hard to get into the Avengers. But otherwise, it felt pretty Spider-Man-y.
I'm just saying that
he said no to the Avengers. Let's be honest.
That's clearly temporary because we've seen the Infinity War trailer.
I mean, when Thanos shows up, what you gonna do?
I'm just saying Spider-Man is clearly more of a joiner now. And then they did the whole corporate thing, which I wound up really liking. And I had to sort of adjust my expectations of what Spider-Man was. And I like that he's evolved in that way.
Right. And one of the things that the sort of counterbalances my personal trepidation is seeing kids happy.
Yeah.
That's always going to like kind of, I feel like that ultimately almost has to trump what I care about. Like, if this kid is how he's interested in Spider-Man, then cool.
Yeah. So let's move on to the Marvel Rising teaser, which goes to both of what you're talking about, Ghost Spider, but also about, you know, trying to reach out to new audiences. Because the Marvel Rising teaser, this is going to be animated shorts that is going to lead into an animated feature, which I think is... I don't know if it's going to be a movie feature or if it's going to be like a TV feature.
I probably think it'll be
it's like a two-minute trailer, kind of little sizzle reel kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it has some behind-the-scenes things talking about it, showing the artists working on the designs and some finished animation. When I was watching it, I was like, this all looks neat, but at no point did they actually say what it was. They're like, that this was going to be a feature release, or this is coming out next summer.
They didn't mention it. They said they're going to be 2 minute shorts leading into an animated feature.
Did they in the Marvel thing?
Once.
Okay, I was like, I felt like it was like very buried the lead.
They did bury it. But I think this is all sizzle. And what's cool is it's got Spider-Gwen, a.k.a. Ghost Spider, which is what they've called her, which I actually think it's better than just calling her Spider-Woman. That's confusing.
Yeah. I agree. But
will they change Spider-Gwen, the comic?
They might. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a fun name, but I don't think anybody would be too broke up.
But it's also Squirrel Girl, yep, using the girl from the AT&T commercials, who is, or the Sprint commercial, whatever she's on.
Yeah.
Who is great, and she was cast in the live action that didn't happen.
Yep.
And then we've got
America Chavez.
America Chavez, Ms. Marvel, one of my favorite characters. I'm super happy to see an animation. Yeah. Quake from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is, they're going to keep trying to make Fetch happen. Good for them. And I can't remember who the other characters... Inferno, which I think is one of the Inhumans.
Inferno, I thought, was a mutant.
Is he a mutant?
I thought he was one of the Hellions or one of the...
I don't know who that dude is
at
either.
Least one or two characters, yeah. I was like, I don't know who that is.
But it's very much aimed at diversity.
It's a younger cast.
It's a younger cast.
And also brings in, like, Captain Marvel. Or
Captain Marvel, yeah, yeah. And Captain Marvel's being played by Kim Raver from 24.
Yeah, honestly, I thought the voice cast on this was pretty stellar.
Are they, is Captain Marvel going to be, like, sort of overseeing this team?
Yeah. That's our guess, yeah.
But they're going to be shorts.
Yeah.
Well, I would assume the two-minute shorts are going to sort of...
each character?
It'll introduce characters like the Overwatch shorts or, like, so the,
Not a bad idea.
What's the other one?
Team Fortress trailers,
things like that, and then the longer feature, which will be the main story.
I think that's probably true. I thought it was interesting too that there's Sana Amanat is one of the people. She's moved up in Marvel to be creative. She's one of the editors who helped co-create Ms. Marvel.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And it's kind of interesting to see her. But the other dude who was there, I don't remember who this dude is, but he said like four times, like, "Well, it's a Marvel story," and I'm like, dude, Marvel has a certain reputation, but he's like, it's a Marvel story, so there's gonna be great characters and action, and then he's saying like the most generic things. I'm like,
right,
this is not a great pitch here.
Right, you think he was kind of leaning on the, hey, remember those movies you liked? Hey, remember those movies you liked?
Yeah,
remember those movies you liked? Anyway, it all looked pretty good to me. The only thing that I was bothered by was indeed the fact that I was like, I'm not real clear what this is all going to be when it comes together.
They only said it once, but I believe it is like 2-minute shorts leading into an anime feature. Yeah, I'm excited about it.
I think this is probably more of a internet need of headlines. But yeah, I saw like, the usual internet troll jerkwads were like, oh, it's a social justice warrior movie, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
but they're like, they're never going to be happy unless it's like original Cap, Thor, and Iron Man, owning slaves.
Right.
Those guys can all go to hell, so... but yeah, I saw them babying about it.
Yeah, no surprise.
I'm sure they're like, oh, there's no representation of Marvel anywhere else that I can find.
If only there were 17 movies.
Yes.
Spider-Man Homecoming, the director John Watts has officially been confirmed for the sequel.
Yay!
Which is good news.
It is.
I've warmed to Spider-Man Homecoming. I over time as I watch it, I like it a lot better.
Because it's a good movie.
It's a good movie.
I'm sorry, why did you bring it up? What's the new...
The director is going to be there for the sequel as well.
He confirmed.
Oh, okay, that's pretty big.
Yeah. So that's good news.
Very unique tone to it, and it was a very frenetic Snapchat-era movie. I don't know, I'm conceptualizing a review of it right
Dave,
now.
Dave, I'm watching you get older as you're growing a gray beard.
But you know, it actually did, I think, very much in a way that, like, say, the Raimi movie did not feel youthful.
No.
It felt like probably a 30, 40-something guy's reminiscences about Spider-Man.
Yeah, agreed.
And this one did very specifically feel, even more so than the other Marvel movies, which are very traditional in a lot of the ways they're filmed, it felt like a bid for kind of a different style of filmmaking.
Well, John Watts is an indie filmmaker. Remember that movie Cop Car?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we were all skeptical about it. At least I know I was. Wait a minute, this guy's done nothing. They're bringing an indie director to this big movie, and it turned out to really work.
Yep.
So, welcome to Night Vale, the podcast that we all, I think, have stopped listening to.
Yeah, but not like for, not out because we were all like, I hate it.
Just because there's too
just
much.
Like, yeah, it's like, it's very prolific, and, you know, sometimes you get enough of a good thing for a little while.
But they're developing its weirdness for a TV show on FX.
I've always felt that it would work pretty well as a TV show.
And FX is the place I'd want it. Like, it's going to be weird and funny and yep. creepy, and I hope this goes through, because it sounds really cool.
Do you get, what's his... Why am I blanking on the... Who's
Cecil?
Cecil. Get the actual Cecil to...
I think that'd be awesome, and it'd be nice if he's basically if he's actually in it, or the narrator from the radio station. Yeah, yep. I think you could do that really well.
It's interesting because, the various live shows, they, of course, have the voice actors for the characters up on stage, And, you know, my conception of them is, you know, the line blurs a little bit between whatever I pictured in my head with whatever the real actor voice actors look like.
Yeah.
And then there's that, you know, that whole weird internet fandom art, which has no link to either of those things.
It's always sad when you see the glow cloud and the person you voiced him is totally not a glow cloud.
Yeah, I feel like we could do better with glow cloud representation.
I think
like,
so, too.
There are glow clouds out there in Hollywood that could take that, that could use that job.
No, I keep talking about it.
Going to the more... this may be the most surreal story this week. Ryan Reynolds is going to star as Detective Pikachu.
All right.
I don't even know what that means.
So,
I know of a Detective Pikachu existence.
Right. What I understand is there's a Detective Pikachu. Pikachu, I believe, is the considered the species.
Yes.
It is so
it's
he
not
is
the
not
singular Pikachu.
He is not the considered like the same Pikachu that people might have known from the Pokemon cartoons that just goes Pika Pika and Choo and stuff like that.
Okay.
This one, this particular one is a detective and speaks.
Like full on sentences?
Full on sentences.
Okay.
I know that people very strongly lobbied for Danny DeVito to be Detective Pikachu, and I think they were in the right. But it's ended up Ryan Reynolds.
Can you just play Danny DeVito from Always Sunny?
There are not a lot of roles that Danny DeVito and Ryan Reynolds could both have a shot at. Deadpool could have been Danny DeVito, I guess.
There's a little
Reynolds
bit
could,
of Danny DeVito in there.
You know, Ryan Reynolds actually could star in Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, he'd fit in with those guys.
Yeah.
I don't know that we really have anything particular to say about this other than that is a thing that is occurring.
Yep. Because 2017.
Because 2017.
I might actually go see a Pokemon movie. That's kind of crazy.
Is your love for Ryan Reynolds?
I like Ryan Reynolds a lot. I watched The Hitman's Bodyguard just recently and thought it was one of the worst movies ever, but I still watched it.
But his aura brought you through to the end.
I watched Blade 3 or... Yeah, it was Blade 3. Wasn't it?
Right.
That was pretty bad.
Nick, have you gone back and binged Guys, a Girl, a Pizza Place?
I wonder if Blade 3 would have been better
with
Danny DeVito.
No, Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo. The answer is yes.
No, but the only reason I can say that I haven't is I don't think it's streaming anywhere.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because I remember really liking that show when it was on.
It might be streaming somewhere. Who would know?
I might have to look. Because
what if it was a third guy at the pizza place and it was Danny Trejo?
It would be kind of fun.
What if Danny DeVito and Danny Trejo are in the Pikachu movie?
Then we're all going to go see it.
Archie Comics just announced they are rebooting Dick Tracy for comics.
I missed this one. Is it through the Archie line?
Yes.
Through the Archie line. Alex Segura, the guy who's been writing Riverdale, I believe.
The Riverdale comic? The
Riverdale comic.
Show? Okay.
Riverdale comic. And one of the artists who's been doing covers for the Riverdale comic are doing a Dick Tracy revamp.
I did not know about that. That interesting.
It just hit just a few minutes ago.
Who's the artist?
I forget his name, but he's been working on Riverdale covers.
Okay.
But maybe. I have a fun... I loved this. I didn't read much of the comic or the strips.
Well, you know, it's like what little I have read. I've got some reprints of the original stuff, and I've read periodically peeked in when like... There was a recent initiative, this was 7 or 8 years ago, maybe, with, was it Max Allen Collins taking over, the comic writer, comic writers, novelist, pulp guy, too, or was he the longtime writer? Anyway, I peeked in when a new sort of arc began and a new sort of initiative, and it was actually pretty good. It was like a serious procedural, and then of course there's the pulp elements and all the crazy stuff that we know from like the movie.
Well, I was gonna say my fondness comes from the movie. Yeah.
I mean, the movie too.
Warren Beatty
weirdness
did
and all.
Yeah, Warren Beatty did a great job with it. Yep. Remember that cast is insane.
Cast is ridiculous. It's one of the reasons why it's a bloated mess. In addition to being a fun movie,
it's not a bloated mess.
It's. Making Dick Tracy a musical is weird. As weird as it was making Popeye a musical.
But it
and
made
I like
sense,
that, too.
But it made sense with a big boy running
I guess so. But I suspect the kids who really who wanted to see the action did not turn up to see
Madonna
endless chorus line stuff at a nightclub.
Do you think...
I think they wanted to see Dick Tracy punch and shoot things.
Do you think that Dick Tracy would have been a better movie with Danny Trejo in it?
Absolutely.
Yes.
He's not in there. There are a lot of people in makeup.
I would replace the kid in it with Danny Trejo. Dick Tracy is forced to adopt a waif-like Danny Trejo.
See, that's interesting, because I would replace Madonna. The Danny Trejo.
With what's his name? Who is the Al Pacino, the club owner, forcing Danny Trejo to dance sexy numbers for him?
What about Flat Top or Prune Face or Mumbles?
So, broadly speaking, this sounds like a cool thing. These guys have earned some credibility.
Well, the cover is really cool, and it shows Dick Tracy and also Flat Top, which I had a fondness for. I had the action figure for
that
Flat
Top. He was a cool. He was his cool sub boss.
Yeah.
Let me ask you: is Flat Top basically the same as Hammerhead in Marvel Comics?
Yes.
Okay.
Other than his head is not hard, he just
he doesn't
cool
actually
hairdo.
Use it. He's just a weird freak, like they all are.
So he's like the poor man's Hammerhead.
I suppose you might say that, but he temporally preceded him.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because it was Dick Tracy was originally...
You're assuming that there was an innate virtue to being able to hit things with
your
head.
Here's a random question.
I do think. Is that not a thing? And speak like an old-time gangster.
He can't just be deformed.
Nope.
When did Chester Gould start doing Dick Tracy? Was it...
The 30s?
The 30s?
Could have even been the 20s, but I think it was the 30s. Yeah, like 36.
Because when the movie hit, they also released a lot of the older comics as like reprints and stuff, and I remember picking up several of those and really enjoying it. So I have a fondness. I'm looking forward to this.
I wish Francesco Francavilla was drawing it. Like, I wish he was drawing a lot of things.
Yeah.
He'll do covers.
But, yeah.
Almost certainly.
Yep. But anyway, I say bring it on. I'm fascinated that they got that license. I wonder if that means that some of those other newspaper strips or anything might go their way.
I always wanted one of the wrist watch walkie-talkie.
That's cool. It's somehow still cool.
It's still, and with technology nowadays, it should be able to do it.
Yeah, I know. That'd be a cool, still, you know, cool Halloween costume. The classic, the kind of the vivid yellow trench coat and hat with a cool walkie-talkie.
Can't you just buy an Apple Watch and use FaceTime on it?
It's not the same. It's got to look old-timey. Got to have like heavy brass look to it.
Okay.
And then you have to, wearing it, you have to beat up Flat Top.
And really, an Apple Watch is for like $500. I don't want to.
Anyway, I'm sure the technology is there.
I'm sure it is too.
All right, one last story. This is just from Twitter. Noelle Stevenson tweeted this out. She's one of the creators of Lumberjanes. She is showrunning a She-Ra reboot for DreamWorks and Netflix. A cartoon, I
assume.
Now, DreamWorks and Netflix also did Voltron.
Yep.
And so my immediate thought is a Lumberjanes-inspired She-Ra that's sort of aimed at younger girls. And I'm like, I can see where this would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, Lumberjanes does not in tone feel action-adventure-y enough for it. But it's general, like, it's kind of... It's diversity, its sense of kind of like fun and you know, playful characters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I could see all of that informing an adventure show in a really cool way.
The villainous Hordak.
Hordak, yeah. Who else was in that? Who was that
Hordak
like?
Was the main one.
Who was that like True Heart dude or whatever who was like had a heart on his chest?
I don't know.
It's very on the nose, but I don't remember.
I don't think he was much in the cartoon, but I think there was like a figure of him.
I'm sure.
I think he was supposed to be the love interest, but somehow wasn't even on the cartoon.
Here's what I know about She-Ra. There is a girl, and she's named She-Ra.
She's a different planet than He-Man.
Okay.
Is she
are they
not
related?
She has sister?
Yeah, but they're on different planets.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I don't know. It's a story.
People talk about brother from another mother, but I've never heard sister from another planet.
They did have there was a crossover, I think, that explained it. She fights Hordak, who looks cool, by the way.
Yeah, he's got a great
visual. As a kid, I was torn because I didn't want to touch those gross girl toys, but Hordak looked cool, and I wanted that figure. I ended up not doing it, and I regret it.
# feminism.
Yep. She has a little creature named Cowl, who looks like a Mogwai, but like flies around and glides on its ears. It does.
See, what's great about this is you could be making all of this up and I wouldn't know. You would just be making all of this up.
And I think that's everything I know. I was trying to see if I could remember any other creatures or allies, and I'm blanking. But... I'm down with it. I think this could be a lot of fun.
Maybe they'll put Orko in it and it'll be better.
Orko improves nothing. Orko is the anti-Trejo.
You know, I as a kid actually liked Orko.
I liked
him. He was
too.
A rare case of one of those meddling.
I never
felt
that he was the anti-Trejo.
Orko is like Uni. Doesn't improve anything.
No, he looked cool though.
He's very cool.
He looked like
he's not wearing any pants. Orko's a pervert.
Orko has no legs. Okay? He has no.
Why are you making fun of him for not having legs? He doesn't need pants. He has no legs.
He has little cool goblin ears sticking up out of his hat. Uh-huh. He had a scarf on, and he looked like a little ghost man.
Yeah,
but with goblin ears and a hat.
This is all accurate. Everything you're saying is accurate.
But and then he would like try and help, and he would accidentally spoil things.
See? Like Uni.
Yeah, it's, you know, in creation, he's very close to Uni.
All right, that's it for news this week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, December 13th, and there's only two more weeks of comics in the year.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
It's probably time to do our best of next week.
Yeah.
Or a week after.
I'm going to have to, do research. Randy will just be pulling up old files of his and just going through.
But what if there's a comic released on that last week that is very, very good?
We're still not going to, you're not going to know if that's going to be the best comic of 2018 and 2017. It's going to be so much better than 15 issues of whatever their book you read.
But it could be.
I don't think so. I'm willing to bet against it.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know.
All right. Nick, you want to start us off?
Sure. Let's talk about The Punisher.
Let's talk about The Punisher.
This is Punisher 219, or the second part of the story where...
Oh, you're picking The Punisher, the crazy armored version?
Yes, this is where Frank Castle gets the War Machine armor.
Why was this? Nick loves The Punisher, and Nick likes Iron Man.
I didn't remember if he had liked the previous one. It is out there, I wouldn't have said, oh, I'm sure Nick is into Frankencastle, because that's an out there idea with Punisher.
No, Frankencastle was a silly, stupid idea that shouldn't have been conceived by Rick Remender.
I own Frankencastle in hardcover.
But it's kind of, it's in execution, it was kind of good.
Frankencastle getting a machine that is basically all...
The biggest weapon you can find,
makes sense.
It's less out there than him becoming Frankenstein, that is true.
That's true. But I will say the audacity and strangeness of that is what made it interesting. It's as if Grant Morrison came over for a day.
That's true. You should have been right up your alley, Nick.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison meets Punisher.
I think if you could do that in the DC... It just doesn't make sense in the Marvel Universe.
The audacity of Frankencastle.
I think you have to accept it almost as like a side story. You know, not worry about the continuity and just say, this is an interesting what if.
That one time he was a Frankencastle and the other time he was an avenging angel.
You know,
and
what I mean?
Remember that one time when there was only one set of footprints and that was the Punisher carrying you.
It's true.
Before you go on with your actual review, Nick... what I was going to say, I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
But it was going to be something good. I was thinking about these different Punisher versions. Oh, I know. I was saying, in the serious versions, like the Garth Ennis real world one,
yeah.
I want them to reference that hardcore, that continuity.
Right,
that,
when he's like,
talk about
there
how
was
he
a
helped.
Time I was an angel.
Right, and there was a time I helped the Legion of Monsters and all of that.
That would be how Grant Morrison
remember
would
when DeKen killed me and I became a Frankenstein?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, you're right. Grant Morrison, that's what he would do. He would tie all of that together.
Morrison doesn't neglect any portion of continuity.
Well, he had the ingenious idea that when he did his Batman run, that every era of Batman was some element of his life, you know, when he was in the 70s and chasing after Talia, that was like his swinging single days when Robin had gone off with the Teen Titans and he could kind of live on his own and chase after the girls, and when he explains it, you're like, it works, he's a genius, he makes sense, it all ties together without mushrooms. But that's not what we came to talk about today. We came to talk about the Punisher and the War Machine armor.
That's true. Matthew Rosenberg started with the last issue with Frank getting the War Machine armor. And I have to say, the second issue is better.
Well, the first issue was all set up.
It was all set up.
It was Nick Fury and the Punisher. It was interesting.
It was a good story. I read that one.
This is better.
This is better because this is Frank actually using the War Machine armor and learning about the War Machine armor.
Yeah.
And it does kind of a thing which I like. Sort of what they did in Nova. They gave Nova somebody to talk to a little bit.
Yeah.
They give Frank
an AI.
Yeah. Frank gets an AI a little bit in the War Machine armor, and seeing those two kind of frame of references.
It's pretty fun.
You know, bash heads a little bit is kind of cool.
There's also an Ennis style.
Should I ask you who the AI is?
It's just an AI.
It's not like it's Rhodey's.
No.
No, but it is very like a Stark kind of. Not do-gooder, but, you know, he's better than Frank.
Yeah.
He wants to, call the fire department when Frank has set a bunch of things on fire, and Frank's like, no, let it burn. There's also, he introduces a very Ennis style, like, an old man who is, like, a representative of, like, the old soldier.
That definitely feels something, like, out of the Max kind of Punisher.
And I think it all works really well. The The action sequences are fantastic.
Yep.
Can I ask a question?
No. Sure.
So here's my question. Ignoring Randy, it sometimes bugs me when somebody will get like an Iron Man's access to an Iron Man suit of armor, and it seems like just anybody could be a potent hero in it without any training or work. And I was like, I feel like Tony and Rhodey and all those people, I presume, have to kind of really learn how to use this suit well.
Yeah.
Does Punisher immediately like know how to use the suit at max?
No, he does not.
Okay, good.
Work it, but he does not work it completely well, or very well.
In fact, the first thing he shows up, we could spoil that, right? The first thing that happens with the gun. He shows up, all scary, comes up against these soldiers, points the gun at them, and it clicks because he didn't know there was a safety on it.
Okay, I'm glad to know that it was armor that's probably... I do realize that the demands of the comic is that you don't want to have, like, issue after issue of him training. You need to kind of get to the meat of it.
But this is all about him learning to use the armor.
Okay,
and it works well. And he's still a badass, but him learning to use the armor is also kind of funny.
Right.
But it also isn't completely devoid of what people... Like the traditional Punisher values and things like that. He's definitely
traditional
there.
Punisher values
of murder.
Murder. But him outside of the suit, it doesn't completely change him. Like, oh, one day I'm a Frankenstein, and then that's what I have to deal with. he can come out of the suit. He's still Punisher.
Right.
But no, I think Rosenberg has done a really good job. I think the art by Guhi Villanova is quite really good. I like his portrayal of the War Machine armor. It's different, and I think adds a nice quality to it.
The other thing is that because there's like a mission built into it, this is definitely a limited time run. Like, he's not going to be in the War Machine armor forever.
Right. Nick Fury came to him.
Nick Fury came to him and sort of said, "Hey, him the armor because of a rogue shield."
I mean, unless Frank doesn't want to get back the armor, which is possible.
Yeah.
I suspect that'll kind of come down to, are the fans liking it?
Yeah.
Or not liking it? Yeah,
but I think
that sounds fun. I'll have to check this issue out.
It fits a lot more than I was expecting it to, and I quite liked it.
Can I just quick? I'm going to throw out a possible further iteration of if we want to try out some more out there stuff with Frank.
Sure.
What if he was a merman?
Okay, I like it. Yeah.
And you know, there's Submariner down there, but there's probably crime in Atlantis, and a mer Frank.
He's going to clean up Atlantis.
Yeah.
Or I kind
of
like it.
Or on the other end of the spectrum, what if he got the Nova Bands?
Yeah, and then went out of space. There's crime in space.
That sounds stupid. Merfrank is cool.
Merfrank or Nova Frank?
There's room for all different
Franks. Merfrank or Iriot.
He's been an angel. He's been the War Machine armor. He's been a Frankenstein.
Yeah.
There's definitely room for him to be like a creature from Black Lagoon.
I'm an Inhuman now that the Inhumans are so popular.
What if Frank joined the X-Men?
It's probably been in a what-if somewhere.
His mutant power is guns.
Dave, what did you pick?
I picked what you were probably considering picking. And
I was going to pick it. Then you were like, no, you punched me in the face and stole it.
Yep. So I'm going to tell people exactly how this came about. I am picking Mr. Miracle number 5 this week. Number 5 of what will be a 12-part sort of maxi series. Mm-hmm. This series already has a reputation from Tom King's writing. You know, it's kind of like, I feel like, people buzzed about his Vision series, but kind of it was a cult series and they didn't really flock to it.
Right.
At this point, by the time this came around, he had his reputation and this has been selling really well, so we keep reordering it for the store.
Yeah.
I picked this issue up because it had naughtiness in it. I was flipping through and I'm like, oh, Mr. Miracle and Big Barda and stuff.
Well, they're a married couple, dude.
They're a married couple. I was just surprised somewhat at the explicitness of this non-mature readers comic. Oh, there is a rated M for mature in the corner, I just noticed.
Interesting.
And in general, it has dealt actually with some heavy subject matter. I know this just from kind of what I've heard about it and what little I've read. But I decided I'd see if this issue by chance stood alone. Nick told me the basic premise of what was going on, which is that he was going to, like, I guess Orion has taken the place of Highfather.
Highfather died. Orion took over. Mr. Miracle was fighting a war against Darkseid, but Orion believes he has been overtaken by the anti-life equation and is working for Darkseid. Therefore, he has to
execute
him.
Interesting.
And it's like going to, it's almost like, seems like it's going to be at this formal thing, like, he is free right now on Earth, but he has to show up for his own execution.
Well, I mean, he is Highfather's son, so he gets a little bit of latitude in this sense.
It's a little more Game of Thrones-y.
Yeah, it's
like,
not like, I sentence you to death on the spot. I mean, there are sort of protocols and things like that.
Right, right. And
it's New Genesis. They're crazy.
The series is also told in somewhat, it's slightly surrealist way. I don't want to say it's like Tarantino-esque, but it does jump around a little bit and have certain scenes where I'm not 100% sure what was going on there, but I got the gist of it.
And could be a lot of ways to read
it. But this issue, in its way, is his last day with Barda.
Yep.
It's an interesting mixture of sort of existential talk. I know the series, you know, has had him contemplating death, that has touched on suicide, and I think I gathered depression.
Yes.
And
there's an entire two-page spread.
There's a very interesting, like, philosophical discussion of this. There's a thing where they go to a fair and have their picture taken while she's holding a Wonder Woman doll, and the camera meaningfully does that little boxes of autofocus on all their faces, including the Wonder Woman doll.
Mm-hmm.
But there may be some naughtiness in the mix, but their conversations felt, despite the kind of strangeness, I suppose. If it had been just some regular guy philosophizing, it would have felt weird. But because he's a new god, even though he also looks like a regular guy, who happens to be wearing a Flash shirt, are they at Coney Island or something, Nick?
Or some sort of fair.
Probably called something else in the DC Universe.
Right.
But his two-page discussion of... I can never... Is it Descartes? Or
Descartes. I don't know either. It was very interesting. And actually, it's pretty deep. He is not just sort of like, every once in a while, Bendis will kind of do this thing, Randy, where he'll like quote some philosopher.
Yep.
And it'll just be like somebody being like, "Hey, remember when that philosopher said this?" Yeah. Tom King like takes it and he has like
a Mr. Miracle discussion.
It's like he tries to pick it apart.
Yeah.
And figure out where he stands on it.
Well, and it's not just that the artist kind of works in tandem with it while he's sort of describing his theories on this. You just see sort of Barda looking at him and then kind of like kissing his head and sort of, she knows this is who Mr. Miracle is.
Right. She's being very lovely and supportive.
And, you know, and it's sort of kind of the final day with the person that you love.
And now I have to mention a funny part in it because it is not all doom and gloom, although it's definitely a weighty issue, but it's also about their love. There's a part where they're trying to get from point A to point B and they get stuck in traffic.
Yep.
And it is kind of weird because it's like getting stuck in the traffic on the way to your execution. And Scott, he asks her, kind of in that conversational Seinfeldian way, if they have a song, you know, like something that was playing when we first met. And he says, he's like, I could have Mother Box play it. And he's like, she says, we met in the pit, Scott. All the noise around us was the moans of the damned. She's like, it was not a moment. And he's like, almost like a sort of talking to Siri or Alexa. He's like, Mother Box, can you play us the moans of the damned? And it seems like it's literally the actual recordings of people being like tortured and stuff.
The Mother Box, please specify which damned.
Right, from his
which
life.
Is great.
And he's like, the pit about 10 years back. And there is like this kind of actually rather disturbing series of background sounds of people like being tortured clearly. But he and Barda like break up in kind of dark laughter. And it's a thing that I would not have guessed would have been as good as it was. Because, you know, I had a little bit of an issue with this series from the beginning just because he's a lighter character. This is an extremely darkly humorous scene. But kind of reading this issue, I get more of a sense of what he's doing. The strangeness of it works precisely because of the connection, I think, to Kirby's Fourth World. But it reminds me of, you know, like when Miller did stuff like Elektra Assassin, you know?
Yeah.
That was pushing, you know, these characters to sort of new levels of darkness and finding new things to say with them. So I really, really liked this issue. I would say someone could probably read it like I did as a random issue. Randy, I can't remember. Are we able to get this back in? Are we going to get the issues we're out of? Nope.
No, two of the issues are gone.
You know, okay. I just saw something in this opening page that I did not. Sort of like a man's Chinese theater, and there's the...
It's the handprint.
But did you see who the handprint is?
Is that Kirby?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Comics will break your heart.
So that's an actual quote from him. That's interesting.
That's awesome. So this has got a lot of little tidbits in there. We don't want to spoil everything, but it's been a fantastic series so far.
At this point, the trade will be out. I'm guessing that they will do a trade at the halfway point in the series. The trade should be out in like 3 or 4 months or something like
that.
I would bet. But anybody who wanted to try a random issue, You could try this one.
You think they'll do this as two trades, not one big one?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they did Vision as
because
two
I think
small
but that
ones.
Was DC. I think was they're probably yeah. thinking, why get just the one trade's worth of money from people when I could when they might very well rebuy
Dave
them.
Dave and I had this discussion earlier today about what the new Watchmen Doomsday Clock. Will they release that as one trade or two trades?
No, one trade, right?
Just that is where I thought.
Two trades,
too.
Because they want
Dave
money.
Dave thinks two different.
All right, well, you guys heard it here first. Next year, we'll see who is wrong and who is dead.
All I'm saying is that if they were adhering to strictly to Watchmen tradition, they probably wouldn't have begun with a holographic cover.
Oh, that's true. I feel like Alan Moore would have done a holographic cover of the technology had been there. That guy loves gimmicks.
We really want to dazzle the viewer.
It's something he would never hurt.
That he would do it. And he would find a way to justify it. That'd be Alan Moore.
I mean, that's true. He did do 3D The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
And he did an entire issue of Promethea that you could unfold as a giant sort of map-like thing. These are very different from schlocky holographic covers.
Alan Moore loves gimmicks. That's what I'm taking away.
I can see this. He'd probably do a holographic cover.
He would never do a holographic
cover. You say.
Randy, what is your pick?
Dave, before I get to my pick, I want to say, 2017 should have taught you. You should never say he would never do it. My pick is Runaways number 4. I thought I was going to have to fight for this one this week, but thankfully Mr. Miracle swept in and stole Dave's time.
I think it was on my list, for sure.
I love this issue because, first of all, this is them going to get Molly, and Molly makes everything better. Yep. And they slowly have put together, over the course of the 4 issues, they put everybody together, including the severed head of Robot Victor.
Yes.
Which is something that happened in the Vision series, apparently.
It did.
And so they go to Molly's grandmother's house, and Molly's grandmother is the scientist who is apparently drawing her blood and checking on her for something. We don't know exactly what. She is like this great maternal woman who gives them all grilled cheese and tomato soup.
She knows what's going on.
Yeah,
or less,
she knows
right?
all about it. She knows about the Pride. She talks about how she was disappointed when her kids like got into the Pride.
Every parent is.
Yeah.
When your kids get into world-ending cult-type activity.
It is sad when your kids... Teach your kids about the Gaborim, or the Gaborim will teach your kids about the Gaborim. This is a setup of, like, a new character who's really interesting. Gert is having none of it because she just wants to go ahead and kidnap Molly and take her back.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really sweet moments. This is basically everything that Rainbow Rowell's been doing with Runaways from the outset, which is... great moments, totally true to the characters.
Laugh out loud moments in every issue.
Oh yeah, and really sweet moments too, like the stuff between Molly and Victor. I really liked.
Yep.
And Chris Anka's version of Old Lace is just every scene is a fantastic expression.
Chris Anka does amazing work here, and
I think what I like is that it feels like it's unfolding. Like even if I might kind of have a sense of the broad stripes of the plot.
Yeah.
I never know what's going to happen from one scene to the next, and I often find myself laughing or like admiring, like, oh, what a neat idea. The scene with Molly and Victor, where she's kind of aware of something that other people are not.
Yeah.
It was a really great scene, and it stood out as something that I feel like a lesser writer, it would not have even occurred to them to do that scene.
Well, and I think that's the secret of this. This is why this feels so much like the original Runaways, because... That was the same thing with Vaughn's one. Like, we didn't know exactly where they were going with it, but all the moment-to-moment stuff was so good. And this is the same way. Like, I don't know where the story's going, but the characters are dead on, and the little writing moments are good. Also, this is a book that could not have existed. It needed a break.
Right.
There's a reason no one could continue The Runaways after Vaughn, because they were trying to continue on from what was basically a finished story.
Right.
And so when Whedon introduced the time-travel element and all that stuff... It didn't quite work. And then when they tried to do other stuff with them, it didn't quite work. So
yeah, I think... hopefully they're kind of... The comics guys might be learning a lesson from this, which is occasionally... At Marvel, we know at least has gotten something of this because they've given Wolverine a break for a while.
Yeah.
I think... I still go back to, I think, JMS's Thor... After that extended break,
I think Fantastic Four is going to do the same thing.
Yeah, Oming killed him off. They took a break. Thor came back strong as hell.
Yeah.
And I hope that is something that they learn about, is that the characters can have a little downtime. And the interesting thing is that it makes this Runaways about like almost like putting a band back together after a rough breakup.
Yeah.
But where the people really still have a strong affection for one another for the most part.
This is the later sequel. It's the way you want to do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm glad they did it, and I think this is the perfect perfect way to do it. And it's every issue's been great. It's probably in the running for my favorite series, the new series of the year. All New Wolverine, number 28. I've talked about this series ad nauseum, so I'll just real quick mention that even though they're in the midst of this crazy thing with, like, the
Muramasa Blade.
Muramasa Blade, which was a dumb Jeff Loeb invention, Tom Taylor is taking those scraps and making delicious food out of them. And he also introduces the Orphans of X, this crazy worldwide organization that is seeking out revenge for all the people that various Wolverines have killed. Which is an interesting set of bad guys, and they're trying to use the Muramasa Blade, and that's all fun, and it's interesting. It's got the same action that this always has. There's attack helicopters and missiles and all that kind of stuff. But the real reason this is my pick this week is because Gabby, the young Molly-esque clone of X-23, finally gets a code name, and it's perfect.
Oh, nice.
And so,
what is it?
I'm not going to tell you.
Nice dick, Nick.
But it's really great, and I love that character, and if nothing else had come out of this book, I would be happy about that character. But, yeah, All the Wolverine has been continuing to be one of my favorite Wolverine books I ever read, and I think they did a great job with it here. Dave, what's your backup pick?
By the way, that means, once again, even if it's not a full-on one, it's Tom Taylor Tuesdays.
Tom Taylor Tuesdays!
My backup pick is also a book that I've talked ad nauseum about, so I'll keep it quick this time. It's Royal City number 8. Probably picked every issue of this series. One of my favorite things Jeff Lemire's ever done, as long as he doesn't completely screw it up and ruin it at the end.
I thought that was Black Hammer.
He hasn't ruined anything. Actually, I don't know how long this is intended to go. It feels like it's actually got some room to grow still. But this is the series about a family growing up in a town where things are kind of rapidly changing and developing, and their own relationships are strained and sometimes very touching, sometimes darkly funny. It's a slice of life kind of comic, but it did have that weird element with the kid who was like sort of like a ghost. That kid is the focus of this issue, which the second has, you know, the issues 1 through 6 were about them in the present. Issues 7 through 12 look like they are, generally speaking, flashing back to the '90s with younger versions of all the family members. Mm-hmm. The kids are like high school-ish or junior high-ish, and you're seeing kind of everybody else and kind of what made them what they are in the first half of the story. So Tommy's the youngest kid, and he's the one that we know appears kind of in this ghostly form later and has died later on.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an issue that's mostly about him kind of trying to figure himself out as he's hanging out with his older brother, who's kind of a bit of a devil-may-care stoner guy, honestly. And he's both, like, kind of annoyed by him and envious of him. They're playing... they're driving with a friend, and the friend is playing Nirvana to give you a little slice of what is happening. And the guy pops the tape out. Tommy's older brother does. Proclaims that the music is gay, and he says, "Fuck this alternative shit, man. I need some Slayer."
Yeah. Yep.
And he's telling him, he's like, "No one is going to remember your stupid Nirvana in 10 years. Yep. Everybody's going to remember Slayer."
Yep.
And
actually, both things are true.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
Everybody remembers Slayer.
The scene actually illustrates why his brother is kind of a fun and a character and obnoxious at the same time. And there's little bits of, like, you know, kind of a, not necessarily a first crush, but a little stirrings of that when he's hanging out with one of the girls in their group. It has a little bit of that sort of wistful slice of life stuff that honestly reminded me of, what's the movie about the rock critic guy?
Almost Famous.
A little bit of Almost Famous to this.
Yeah, I can see that.
Even though this is kind of more of this does not have the brush with celebrity-dom or rock in that way.
Yeah.
But it does have that little slice of being, in your teens and not knowing where things are going, and the world is kind of like pulling you in all these different directions. There's other stuff going on with the other characters. It's all beautifully illustrated by Lemire with, I think, my favorite art from him. I will end my pitch there because I've pitched this book so often. Just try the trade, or this is not an issue you would probably jump in on.
No.
But the trade is out there, y'all, so get on board.
Nick?
So I'm going to pick something I've picked many times before as well, and that is Action Comics number 993.
You specifically picked Action Comics 993 before?
Yes. Multiple times. Futurist. I am like one of the main characters in this book. I am Booster Gold.
It does sort of work.
No. This is sort of fallout, continuing fallout of the Oz effect. Clark can't really wrap his head around the fact that this new guy says he's his father. So he uses the Flash's treadmill to go back in time to Krypton to see its destruction. And, of course, with time travel, things don't occur the way you want them to.
Yep.
Enter Booster Gold and Skeets. This is written by Booster Gold and Skeets' creator, Dan Jurgens. It's also drawn by him.
And if I'm not mistaken, that cover is at least partially an homage to the old John Byrne Man of Steel series that had Krypton. It looks like that was how he drew the exploding Krypton on the cover. Yep.
This is pretty great just because Booster gets a focus.
Are you a longtime Booster fan?
I've liked him. I'm not as big of a fan of him as Randy is, I think.
I really like Booster Gold.
But seeing him sort of in his classic traditional outfit, so it feels very pre-Rebirth and New 52.
Yep.
Seeing him going up against Wally or Flash and interact with Superman. And also just getting Skeets. I love Skeets.
Who is the artist on that?
This is Jurgens.
Oh, did he draw it?
Yep.
Who's the inker?
It's inked by Joe Prado and Cam Smith.
Okay, they just gave it a slightly different sort of polish. It looks very nice. I think they're a good fit for his art.
Yeah, but again, I don't want to tell much more because I don't want to spoil stuff, but that is the general thing. There's some fun stuff.
If one reads this, are they going to get to see Superman interacting with Booster Gold?
Yes.
I think that's your pitch right there. Superman and Booster Gold hanging out, or not hanging out, but maybe fighting.
And there's also a member of the Daily Planet who's a huge fan of Booster Gold, and I was very fond of that.
Oh, interesting. Is it Bibbo?
Other things on my stack this week are Cable 152, which sees the return of an external that we have been waiting with bated breath to see. I don't know.
Have we?
I don't know if we've been waiting
anyone.
I don't know if we've been waiting for Gideon, but he shows up.
Nick says waiting. I say dreading.
But I do still like this team and the interactions between Armor and Longshot and Shatterstar and Cable.
It seems like there's also been, like, in the other X books, like Astonishing and I guess X-Men Gold, there have been call-outs to other eras of the X-Men as well. It seems like, I think, and sometimes not always great eras, it is interesting to see, I think, people kind of trying to do the, I want to try and redeem it, or find what was fun about it, or make fun of it even sometimes.
Dupe even gets some pretty cool moments in here as well. So
who does?
Dupe.
Oh, Dupe, right, yeah.
Little
green potato Dupe.
Exactly, green potato Dupe. And then there's the Despicable Deadpool 290, which on the cover says this issue Cable dies. That does in fact happen. Just not in the way you think it would. Weapon X number 12 started the Nuke Clear War because it's all about the Daredevil character Nuke.
Sure.
Detective Comics 970.
Also a prophecy about the future of the world.
Sure. Detective Comics 970, which is a sort of a focus a little bit on just Clayface, but dealing with some fallout of Tim returning, his relationship with Stephanie, but definitely a focus on Clayface, which I thought was cool. Then just one other one, X-Men Blue, number 17. This one is I was not expecting, and I guess I had forgotten. They go to the year 2099, and we get the X-Men of 2099, which I never thought I would see.
That's pretty crazy.
I never thought I would see Skullfire, Bloodhawk, Cerebra, Metalhead, and Crystalline ever again.
Uh-huh. Neither of us didn't care, but
good?
Yeah,
Colin Bunn
and Rob Silva, they do a really good, or RB Silva do a really good job with it, and it's fun to see that world again with Alchemex, and I'm kind of sad we didn't get Ravage. But. But, you know,
Ravage's time is coming, I feel. I feel 2018 will be the year of Ravage 29.
Sure.
We're the American dream came true. We'll be living it.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure when Disney buys Fox and becomes Alchemex.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That's actually accurate.
Rent your, you know, buy your old garbage truck because we'll need it to smash through the barriers.
So you have to be Ravage 29.
Yeah.
Yep. Randy, I'm counting on you for that.
Yeah, you got to go part feral. All
right.
You're on your way.
I'm halfway there. I got a beard.
A little feral.
Dave, what else do you have?
Right. So Dark Horse has a new kaiju comic called Giants. which I wanted to, I haven't read yet, but had really, really amazing artwork in it that had elements of sort of a manga style, but also a little bit of the kind of the, I want to say the sort of energetic look of like, you know, more of the Last Airbender or Voltron. So if you are a giant monster fan, you might want to check in on this. There is a book called Judas. It is about Judas, the guy who betrayed Jesus.
Judas Iscariot?
It is. It is. But interestingly, kind of a character-centric look at him, and as well as after his death, in which case you see him in hell, pondering whether how his fate came about, and if he was, like, on this forced, like if his, if it was preordained, and if so, what kind of, you know, loving God would force a preordain him to be a betrayer?
Christ or God?
You actually do get some flashbacks that kind of flesh out his character and motivations. There are some very creepy angels, which are drawn in the per the real weird descriptions of like multiple faces and multiple wings and all this like mishmash of eyes and wings and stuff.
I have to say the artwork in here is just stunning.
It reminded me a bit of who did the that Clary and the Witch Boy
miniature? Frasier Irving.
Yeah, it has a bit of a Frasier Irving look to it. Yeah. So that
the colors are beautiful,
painted in sort of an interesting stylized way. Anyway, I actually quite like that. Let's see, there's a new comic from Black Mask called Grave Diggers that has had a weird premise that I took note of when I was making the sign. I have not read it yet. But there are people making strange and psychedelic drugs out of corpses in this.
Okay.
And I believe the fresher the corpse, the stranger, the more potent the high in it. And it seems like a brother and a sister kind of get caught up in it because they're like trying to make peace with their recently deceased father, and they somehow run afoul of these drug dealers. And I don't know, strangeness happens. I don't know if it's supernatural or just weird as hell, but it sounded entertaining. One or two quick graphic novel things. The same artist, maybe the same team in general, who had done those all-ages adaptations of both the of Star Wars original trilogy and the Star Wars prequels. Each set of three got, like, a nice big hardcover.
Yeah.
They did a neat little slightly smaller digest-sized one for Rogue One with that same beautiful art that almost looks like, imagine Disney animating Star Wars or something like that. So they did one for Rogue One. And then there's a hardcover of John Byrne's, it's called The DC Universe by John Byrne. It's not, you know, he's of course had long runs on Superman and other characters, but this is kind of the, all the one-shots and little mini-series he did over the years. Just looking at the back, I see from the Secret Origins issue I had, the Doom Patrol origin. There's some Flash stuff in this, Teen Titans, Hawkman, Enemy Ace. Anyway, there's a reasonable chance I'm going to end up picking this up tomorrow if nobody's picked it up by the time I come into work. but I'm sure we'll have it back in again. Anyway, it looks like lots of fun stuff.
For me, most of the stuff on my list is Marvel, but Daredevil number 596 continues the Daredevil versus Kingpin, the Mayor, with a really good final twist as to where that story's going. Amazing Spider-Man number 792 is the second part of Venom Inc., which I missed last week reading Venom Inc. Alpha, so I went back and read that too. Mm-hmm. This Venom versus Spidey thing is interesting. There's basically like a gang of Venoms going around infecting other supervillains, and Flash Thompson has to team up with Spidey, and sort of because he's trying to get the symbiote back.
Right.
And it puts them at odds with Eddie Brock and all the other people who've worn the Venom suit, which apparently is like five people.
Yep.
As well as like Maniac and some of the other
that also would fit the kids in the store the other day. Kid in the store the other day who was fascinated by all the variations of Venom.
There's lots of them. Yep. But anyway, I'm not the world's biggest Venom fan, but so far this has been an interesting story. It's another little Spider-Verse or clone conspiracy or the kind of thing that sounds like a terrible idea, but in Dan Slott's hands has actually been pretty fun.
Marvel's been able to pull that off sometimes lately.
And then New Superman number 18 wraps up the first era of New Superman and sort of builds to a big conclusion against the big bad guy. Kong Keenan sort of comes into his own as New Superman. The Justice League teams with the Justice League of China. And we get a sort of resolution of the story of his parents. Basically, this
that's
is
a lot of stuff.
I really like this book, and this was a good, like, if I decided to just, like, pick just these up, I feel like I get a good self-contained story, even though it's going to continue on from here.
Nice.
So yeah,
I appreciate when you kind of have nice little definitive moments like that.
And then Champions Volume 2 is this week, which is more of Champions. This introduces the freelancers, the sort of anti-champions, the corporate sponsored
yep.
young ones.
Yep. If it was Twister, they'd be Jonas's team.
They're the young Jonas's.
Yeah. Yes. Let's always keep the Twister metaphor handy.
And then also Secret Empire stuff is collected in there, and that's pretty good. And Descender, the first hardcover, collecting the first 12 issues of this, maybe.
I think it is. It's possible the first three.
It may be more than that, yeah. But it's a big, giant, oversized hardcover of this sort of beautifully painted sci-fi book that we all really liked and is a perfect Christmas gift for the Descender lover in your life.
Yep.
Before we close out, there's one important question.
Yeah.
Would Danny Trejo improve Twister?
Yeah.
Yes, he would.
Yeah, I think so.
The answer is yes.
I don't know quite how he would show up. Would he be someone who helps out their team? A dangerous ex-storm chaser?
He'd be a freelance ex-storm chaser who was Billy the Extreme's mentor.
I could see it.
In the early days of storm chasing.
I could see it.
And he would be eaten by a tornado midway through to give him motivation.
Right. He could do the, no!
Yeah, if Bill Paxton were still alive, they could make Twister 2 the prequel that shows... Actually, you don't need Bill Paxton because he's too old for it. So you can go back and show the evolution of Billy the Extreme in the prequel to Twister with Danny Trejo.
I'm not against it. I'm not against
You're going to allow it?
Yeah. I also want Danny Trejo to romance like the aunt who makes some steaks.
Meg.
Yeah. Meg and Trejo could be
just a thought.
Distant lovers that maybe reunite at the end of the film.
Right. One of those weird sculptures she has out on her patio actually has built into it a machete in case he ever needs a weapon at hand.
And then he used that machete to defeat the tornado at the end.
Yes. It's payback time, tornado.
Well, on that note...
On that note.
We'll be back in just a minute to talk about some TV and some movies we've been watching. All right, so sometimes we watch stuff, and then we come here and we talk about it.
Yes.
And sometimes we record that. This is one of those times.
Never mind. I lost my train of thought there.
Oh, okay.
That happens.
So, Nick and I have watched, you've not just watched, the new sci-fi show Happy.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've read the comic it's based on. I have not seen the show.
And I think we all like the comic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is basically about an ex-cop hitman who is drawn into saving a little girl by her imaginary friend, a blue cartoon horse named Happy.
Yes.
Yep. If you were to think about it as like a foul-mouthed, violent hitman story with a My Little Pony in it.
Yeah.
Then that would kind of get you a little bit there.
And Sci-Fi did this, and it's Christopher Maloney plays the hitman, and Patton Oswalt is voicing the horse, and I thought it was kind of amazing. They really translated it well.
I was going to say, it felt like a very faithful adaptation of the first part of that story.
I was worried that Sci-Fi was going to, like, kiddie it up or make it...
Dear God, do they not kiddie this at all?
No, this is like... You know how Preacher, the TV show, is like bonkers, balls to the wall? Like, I don't necessarily love that TV show, but they definitely captured the, well, we're going to do whatever we feel like doing.
Yeah.
Yes.
This definitely has that anarchic sense of, like, they are not ashamed of the language or the violence or the sex or any of that.
No. They go full tilt.
Yeah, and Chris Maloney is fantastic here. He's good. Yeah. He can do drama. He can do comedy. This mixture that he's doing here where he's like, there's definitely some true darkness in this guy's life.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, it's so ridiculous.
Well, you have a talking blue horse.
He's playing a parody of the badass kind of thing.
Right.
There's an awesome torture fight scene that just is... It's spectacularly good. It's darkly funny. It's almost Tarantino-esque.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it does help that Grant Morrison is actually, like, he wrote the teleplay.
Okay.
He also is one of the producers on there, along with Derek Robertson.
Yeah.
They're actually really involved in this, so... Definitely giving them their flavor onto the TV screens. And I do think it's great. Patton Oswalt is fantastic as Happy.
Yeah.
Much better than I think Bobby Moynihan would have been.
Oh, I forgot that he
was... Moynihan was originally, then he got his sitcom on ABC or CBS,
I'm so glad this went that way, because Patton Oswalt's perfect here.
Yeah, he's great.
The series was just a four-issue comic series, which had a very finite quality to it, even if, I guess, Morrison might follow it up at some point.
I believe this
How do
is
we
a
think it's going to... Okay, is it gonna...
I think it is, too. I haven't heard that it's a full-on, like, season.
Yeah, I think it's a miniseries.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's crazy. The first episode is up everywhere. Like, you can buy it free on iTunes, buy it free on Amazon. It's up on YouTube. It is worth a look, and I'm super excited to see where that goes from here. It's a great adaptation. And also, if you haven't read the comic, read the comic. It's fun.
Yeah, it's like a $14.99 comic. Just
it's
just
also a weirdly appropriate like Christmas things. It takes place in the winter,
and
the bad guy's an evil Santa Claus.
I was gonna say he's an evil Santa Claus. It also turns out that Grant Morrison really likes Christmas, sort of like the guy who does Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Not like Shane Black loves Christmas. Yeah, Shane Black loves Christmas more than anyone else loves Christmas.
More than Frank Capra.
What if he hates Christmas and he's just trying to exorcise his demons?
That's possible too. He either loves or hates Christmas more than anyone else.
All right,
Dave. Speaking of Christmas. You went and had a Christmas experience.
Yes, I went to something. I was trying to find a way, of course, to merge my my love both of the Christmas season as well as my love of horror and twisted things.
Yep.
It's like Halloween came into Christmas for a little bit, so I could go see the House of Torment people who do the haunted houses. They put on a special one called Krampus: A Haunted Christmas.
Yep.
Now I'm gonna say. I feel like this was not as strong an experience overall or as deep a one as the Halloween one, which was actually three linked sort of haunted houses.
Yeah.
You might go into one that was like a haunted mansion and another that's like an asylum and another that was like an apocalyptic zombie thing. This was all sort of just one thing, so it was like you kind of brisk through it pretty quickly and there was a little bit of a, whoa, is that everything? But it was still a neat ride.
Hmm.
It is a... imagine going through a haunted house at Christmas time, basically.
Okay.
Imagine going through hallways strung with lights, but also body bags hanging from the ceilings. a room where chained to the bed in the center was like a ghoul-like Scrooge who's begging you to take me with you! Take me with you! They did their consistent surprises of course, people leaping out and sort of misdirection like they do in haunted houses. One of my favorite ones was one... I went to see it with my brother who I did the House of Torment with last year, too.
Yeah.
Something where there was a room that looked all filled with nice presents. And, of course, they have their kind of like their mist. Their smoke machine makes a mist throughout all of these things. And all the rooms have a sort of dreamlike quality. But you go in there and it looks like a nice festive Christmas thing. But there is like... There were, like, legs sticking out from under the presents, and you kind of brace. That's where you brace for the something to come out and try and grab you there.
Uh-huh.
But, in fact, the Christmas tree itself, like, sprung arms that were, like, this mottled green swamp thing type arms that tried, as the tree itself tries to grab you.
Okay.
I think my favorite part was there was a giant, like, the, what do you call it, a nutcracker. Clearly a guy in a nutcracker costume
right.
That chased us that had like opening and closing chomping jaws which was really awesome. Like I had to like pause and just say, oh my god, that's so effing cool.
And they were like, you're supposed to be scared.
Yeah, I couldn't help it. I feel like they probably enjoy people being impressed by them. Of course there's twisted like elves and other stuff in there. There was a Santa who had like a flask and looked like he had like gotten in and like killed the family and stuff.
Sure.
All sorts of twisted stuff. It's, you know, their scares are kind of cheap scares there. Loud sounds, banging doors, sudden appearances of, like, faces against, through windows and things. But it was a good time. And they only did it for that one weekend, so I can't say, quick, run out and do it. I think that was it.
Yeah.
But something to keep in mind for next year. It was fun. It was one of those ones where, even though it was not quite as polished as I might have hoped, I'm very glad I went because it's not too often, except for watching Nightmare Before Christmas, that I get to combine those two loves.
And more recently, Krampus.
What's that? Krampus. But yeah, as a real quick aside, if you've never seen the movie Krampus, it's a very good Christmas horror movie.
Yeah, it is.
It really is a lot of fun. I think a little bit of shades of Gremlins in its mixture of comedy and spooky stuff. Probably leaning a little scarier than Gremlins, maybe.
I don't know. Gremlins had some pretty horrific moments, if you really think about it.
Well, it was more like gory and stuff like that, but I don't know if it was like trying to be too eerie.
Do you not Krampus remember the eerier. Gremlins getting blended? And
I am saying that's gross out stuff, though. That's not like scary necessarily. True. Anyway, I think people who like Gremlins would like that, or if you're just looking for that. It actually is a good little, in its weird way, it has all the usual family stuff and family quarreling that's that makes Christmas just Vacation beloved.
Traditional dysfunctional family.
It's just that there's blood and stuff in this one.
It's true.
Nick, you went and saw Lady Bird?
I did. This is one of those weird experiences. I never watched a preview for this movie. I really had very little to know what it was going to be about.
You assumed it was about Lady Bird Lake in Austin?
Sure. I mean, that was a potential.
Yep.
I did know that it was at a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, like the highest rated movie that they've ever had. Movie.
I know I'm going to butcher her pronunciation, and I know there were actually videos telling you how to pronounce it, but is it Cerise Ronan?
Could be.
Oh, right. She's got the crazy, like, Irish or Gaelic name or whatever.
Yeah. She stars, and this is a coming-of-age drama-comedy tale about a young girl in 2002, sort of dealing with an oppressive mother, dealing with first love, sexual experiences, trying to get into college, and sort of just living life and trying to find herself.
Okay.
And I was... The story is very simple, and yet very affecting as well. All the acting in it was fantastic. She was great. She was very believable as a teenager at that time. My wife was like, yeah, it's pretty much my life, dealing with my mother and stuff like that. So it was felt very true, and it probably reflected the creator, the director's, life growing up, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. And I can see why it's getting such acclaim, and more than likely will get a lot of nominations for Oscars.
My quick internet look says her name is pronounced Saoirse or Saoirse.
Saoirse. Okay.
Yep.
She was the host on SNL very recently and had several skits that I thought were very funny.
Oh, nice.
She does have a wider range than straight up.
She can do beyond just the depressing movies?
Yes, but she has done a lot of depressing movies. And, I think I looked her up and... now I'm blanking on the titles of some of them, but yeah, I was like, I'd seen all of these. I'd forgotten that she was actually like the little kid in them or right. things like that. I think there was one with Tilda Swinton about like a CIA assassin where it was, I forget, but
I remember that movie existing. I haven't seen it, but I remember it.
But no, this one was really, really good. I do recommend people seeing it. I don't know if I'd rush out to theaters if you don't feel,
not one that's necessarily a big blockbuster one, but right. maybe if somebody is looking for something different.
Exactly. We were the only ones in the theater, so, on a random Tuesday night.
And then Ash vs. Evil Dead just came to Netflix.
Yes.
Dave, you've seen...
I've seen, the first two episodes.
I think that's kind of where I was, too, and I liked it.
Yeah, I'm not as big into, as a kid, I loved the Evil Dead stuff and Army of Darkness.
Did you see them in theaters, or...?
No, I rented them on beat-up old VHS tapes from grocery stores, like you should.
Yep.
I bought them on VHS and watched them at, 2 in the morning.
That's righteous. That's very righteous. But my horror taste changed, and I fell a little bit away from that sort of anarchic style, although I do like, say, Raimi's Drag Me to Hell and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't quite have the full Bruce Campbell hero worship that some do, and even though he is a badass. So I was not necessarily super drawn to this series, but when I watched it sort of recently, it was really pretty good it was doing.
Yeah,
I mean, Sam Raimi directs the first episode.
Yep.
And then subsequent directors after that, but... That's
funny. Doesn't Bruce Campbell's kind of a little pathetic.
Oh,
right?
Very much so. Yeah.
He's kind of picking up the messed up chicks and
he's
stuff.
He's basically on the run, horn dogging his way through value marts.
I feel like they watched Burn Notice and were like, let's get this Bruce Campbell to come and do this. Because this is like older Bruce Campbell.
This is
self-aware Bruce Campbell. Yeah,
a little bit of the Incredibles even in the, oh, I got a beer gut kind of thing now.
Oh, yeah. He wears a girdle. But, I mean...
But he also kicks ass in the traditional Bruce Campbell style.
And then they definitely don't shy away from that Evil Dead style. You get that kind of running cam of the evil as it blows through forests and random things. Uh-huh. I think the effects for the Deadites are fun.
Yeah, it's very gory and very R-rated.
Oh, very much so. Sex, blood, violence.
And it's also, it's a good riff on the, when you got a movie premise like this, to take it and make it a TV show, sometimes the premise stretches and breaks.
Yeah, that's true.
This works. Like, this notion of them, like, it's almost like what they did with, like, Friday the 13th, the series. Like, they take it and they give it a reason to be on the road and to have a continuing story and
so
that kind of thing.
If I'm not mistaken, this throws out Army of Darkness.
I believe that is correct, because otherwise he would now still be in the past, right?
Well, he slept. He woke back up.
That ended with him, I believe, almost like skateboarding on some kind of cart or something while he fired a shotgun into a Deadite.
Oh, that's right.
Like they had followed him back.
Oh, that's the end of Evil Dead 2.
Is it?
I think it is.
I thought that was the end of Army of Darkness.
No, I think it's Army of Darkness as
Is it? Okay. All
right. But they definitely they haven't referenced Army of Darkness in the five episodes I've watched.
Right, and that actually could even be one of those weird legal things, like that was made by some
produced
other studio,
and
so it's technically
separate. Have outright shown clips, many clips, of Evil Dead 2.
Oh,
And, I mean, Evil Dead 2 is just a remake of Evil Dead, just with more campy.
The polished,
But they've outright shown clips and shown, like, his girlfriend and things like that. So they're definitely referencing continuity.
I bet they can't do Army of Darkness.
Yeah, that's probably a licensing thing.
Probably so. Yeah. But I think what's added to this show is giving him kind of an entourage.
Yeah, he's got a supporting cast.
He's got a supporting cast. Yeah. Sort of like what The Flash, they give The Flash.
One was, like, his co-worker.
Yep, Pablo.
Yep.
And then the girl Pablo is desperately in love with and only sees him as a brother figure. She's great as well. And then you have Lucy Lawless as I have yet to see you exactly who her character is, but she has some ties to the old cabin.
I was going
to
ask, how far are you into this?
5 episodes in. There's 10 episodes in the first series and 10 episodes in the second series, which are both seasons got added to Netflix.
Oh, it's both seasons.
Yeah, it's both seasons. So I'm definitely going to kind of power through them because I'm in that right frame of mind for it and that headspace.
Merry Christmas.
Exactly. Merry Christmas, Deadite.
And then it was violently chainsawed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think an episode goes by where Ash doesn't...
violently chainsaw something?
Chainsaw somebody's head off. And I'm actually fine with that. And they, of course,
it's all done with that kind of over-the-top humor of Sam Raimi.
And his one-liners and just constant...
He's somehow a mixture of pathetic and badass.
But also there are some genuine kind of creepy scenes in this, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That first episode has the introduction of the cop character, the sort of newer character that has to end up, like, killing his or her her partner.
Yeah.
And there was some legitimate creepy stuff of him, very Sam Raimi creepy. Climbing on the walls and the ceilings and...
Yeah, Sam Raimi is not without his legitimate horror bona fides.
No.
It's not all just ridiculous.
Also, just as an aside, how many brothers does Sam have? I feel like there's like...
7.
I feel like
I actually didn't know that there was one beyond the...
I feel like he actually... the entire Raimi clan works on this show. Because
Sam Raimi. What's the new guy's name?
Ezekiel Raimi.
Ezekiel Raimi. Josephus Raimi.
Jedediah Raimi.
Jedediah Raimi. Yeah.
But I heartily recommend this. If you loved the movies, I don't think you're going to go wrong. And it's just fun.
Yeah. And it's cool that it's on Netflix now.
Yeah.
All right. That wraps it up for us this week.
All right.
Until next week.
Yo, Joe. Ho, ho, ho.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.